Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
Obsessive compulsive disorder is still the subject that we are discussing this month. And today we're talking about the role of family in OCD recovery. Now, family can play a huge part in either helping or hindering recovery from OCD. Sometimes loved ones unknowingly support compulsions in an effort to help, while at other times they may misunderstand the condition entirely. Today's conversation looks at how families can be empowered with the right knowledge and tools to support their loved one's recovery journey. And Dr. Jerry Poseidonholt joins us once again to give us some insights on the subject. Good morning and welcome back to the program.
Good morning, listeners.
Thank you so much for joining us once again, Doc. And this is an interesting one, how the family can get involved. Now, before we get into our role as the family, what are some unintentional ways that we might actually be reinforcing OCD behaviors?
Within a normal relationship, that in any family relationship or intimate relationship, mm-hmm. we do things for our partners and our family members out of love. Yeah. So we want to do something that makes them feel better, and you put your slippers in the cupboard instead of letting it lying around. That kind of normal behavior mm-hmm. plays a role with OCD, because if I don't know that my family member's behavior is due to an illness, then I can try and accommodate them or accommodate and change my behavior because I'm believing that's going to help them.
Yeah.
And unwittingly, I can actually then be acting into that kind of illness thoughts that a patient have got.
So do you mean in terms of like maybe doing what they want me to do by and thinking that that's helping them, or going the opposite direction?
Yes. No, it's often in terms of helping them, because what happens then, let's say someone's got this issue of contamination.
Yeah.
So the thought is that we have to sort of be clean. Yes. And then often they say the partner must change their clothing when they come in from outside.
Okay.
And, they must wear home clothing.
Yeah.
But they're not that'll be okay if the partner is working manual labor.
Yeah.
Or is a mechanic with dirty clothing or whatever, farmer.
Yeah.
Yes, you wash and you wear clean clothing, but if it's not really indicative, it's not rational, and I'm changing because of an obsessional thought my partner will have,
okay,
then I'm actually worsening the ill.
Okay.
No. It's very difficult to resist it because very few people like living in a conflict environment.
Yes.
And if the person who's got the illness doesn't know that they've got the illness, that can lead to a lot of conflict.
Yeah. So they feel they're being perfectly reasonable.
Yes. Because they think it's normal.
Yeah.
And because fear is such a dominant feeling, we want to get away from it. That, that relief, that temporary relief, and then it just creates that old cycle again.
Yeah. Mm. And how can education change the way that family members support a person with OCD?
Well, if they understand the cycle and that, you get this illness thought, and the illness is the problem.
Yeah.
Not the person and not the request.
Right.
To have that compulsion. Because what the other person wants to do is they want to get the family to sort of live out their compulsions. Mm-hmm. If I, they've got a fear of contamination, I have to wash my hands 10 times. Mm-hmm. So I'm living it. And that, again, when you come back to anxiety, when it's part of an illness, the brain doesn't know that sort of thought comes from an illness perspective. So it feels the anxiety that the thought is creating, and now it's trying to look for danger.
Yes.
And if it can't find it, it goes further into the future, and it goes towards other people around me.
To fetch danger from
someone. I'm trying to control everything and everybody around me. And the more people do that, the further the anxiety will go.
Okay.
And the more control people want to do.
Mm.
So living into that sort of fear and that request actually worsens the anxiety over time, mm-hmm. because there are no boundaries.
So what you're saying, just to divert a little bit from what you're talking about today, mm-hmm. when you say that the issue is the illness itself, let's see if I'm understanding you correctly. Let's go back to the example of someone who has this fear of contamination. It is not the fear of contamination itself. If it wasn't, even if you try to rationalize that specific fear, it would be something else then. If it wasn't the fear of contamination, it would be some other fear, some other anxiety over something else, not necessarily the contamination.
Yes, exactly. You're totally right. Yeah, because the problem is that kind of obsessional thinking. For the older people, the record that was stuck, uh-huh. the old plastic vinyls, if they got scratched,
yeah.
they would go around and around and around the same rut,
yes.
and you get the same sound all the
yes.
time.
Yes.
And this is exactly so that there's a thought pattern that gets stuck. And whatever you can, the illness decides what it puts in there.
Okay.
So it's, you know, whatever fear, whatever contamination, something bad's going to happen to people. But that kind of loop is the actual problem, because that's part of the illness.
Okay.
You know, it'll differ what the illness puts in there depending on the person's sort of reality around them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the real problem.
Okay. Sure. All right. Now, what kind of communication is helpful within families dealing with OCD?
Honest, sort of relaxed communication.
Okay.
And communicating with each other when you're not confronting either the obsessions or the compulsions.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we're very anxious, we can't listen.
Right.
And people tend to want to sort of teach each other or rectify something when there's conflict. And that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So setting aside some time and then talking it through and saying, okay, this is bothering, you know, we're going to address this. This is not helpful. What kind of help does the illness person need from the family?
Mm.
And then the family can then sort of put back in terms of, okay, but is that for you or is that for the illness?
Right.
Because by differentiating between the person and the illness, the family already starts helping the person, seeing that some of the thoughts are not their sort of, it's their thoughts, but it's part of the illness. And that they can actually have different thoughts than the illness.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually sitting this morning with a patient of mine with OCD. She irons everything four times. So the thoughts are there.
Yeah.
You know, so while she's ironing, the family can't have a conversation about why are you ironing it four times? And it's mm-hmm. dysfunctional and it's making it effective. So later in the afternoon or over the weekend when she's not ironing,
yeah.
then they can have a conversation about, okay, but how do we do this differently?
Okay, so the timing.
How do we support you? Yeah, timing is important. And knowing what you're addressing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, for instance, what we made a plan with her is that she just take one handkerchief
mm-hmm.
and add that to the washing.
Okay.
And she tries to iron that once.
Okay.
And to do that for a couple of weeks. And then she moves on, if she's successful, move on to another garment. So it's not ironing once just for, you know, the whole bundle. It's just ironing one piece and then two pieces.
Interesting.
And then the family supporting that and then, you know, encouraging and saying, wow, wonderful. You know, you've done it. And not putting pressure on her if she does it successfully to suddenly within a week to do two or three or do the whole bundle, because that's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So the family can also bring that realism in, into, you know, this is okay. On the other side, the family can support by saying, we need you to come with us to have, cake and tea or go and visit the auntie.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to iron. No? You have to come.
Okay.
You know, that's what our family does. So bringing in the normality of what the family does supports the patient then, and the patient then can work with the family towards normality. And they will be anxious and they will be sort of feeling guilty because they're not finishing the ironing and that, but they live a normal life. So the normal life grows stronger and that balances the illness.
Really?
Because what happens with OCD often is that if it's severe, it overtakes a person's life. They can't do anything else. So by the family bringing normality back, that actually protects the person against the illness.
Interesting. So I would have thought that maybe that in itself would be putting too much pressure on the person to say, let's go out for tea or let's go visit, you know, a relative, that might be too much pressure. Is there a line where we say, okay, at this point, if the person protests too much, maybe it's too much too soon. How do we know that here we need to, you know, add a little more pressure, encourage them or let it go?
That's a difficult one. That is the way conversation comes.
Okay.
And knowledge of each other, you know, saying it, but you're always saying it's too much, you're not, you know. But when we do go out, we see that you're better. We see you smile more. So work with us. If someone is resisting specific compulsions and they're starting with it, then adding something else is too much. So you do one thing at a time. So, okay, we're resisting the compulsion, so that's one thing. Once that is settled, and that might take a month or 2 months, then we say, okay, let's bring in, we break the cycle, we break the routine. So you sometimes do something different with us. So that's one, it's a new thing. But, you know, you try and avoid bringing in too many things at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that can be overwhelming, and then the persons tend to fail in terms of resisting the illness.
Interesting. So obviously having to, you know, manage all of that is going to take some patience. What role would you say patience plays in family support?
A lot. Yeah, you have to be patient. And again, depending on the severity and the length of the illness, you know, the longer the illness has been around, the more severe, the more ingrained their habits has become. And understanding that changing their habits and resisting the compulsions does bring relief, but you first have to go through a lot of work and a lot of anxiety and guilt feelings before it gets better. So you have to be patient. You have to be realistic in terms of, okay, but let's change one thing. If that's settled, and that one thing can maybe take sometimes a year to change if it's very severe. And that's good enough because one thing is one thing less. Families tend to want to do too much too quickly.
Yeah.
And then they overwhelm the person. Where families can help, you know, with that, let's say the patient says, or the person suffering says, okay, you pull me out to the family meeting. I give you that that responsibility.
Okay.
The family uses the energy to pull the person out of their rituals. Then that, and if the person is okay with that, can do a second resistance act because that, you know, they've got energy for that because the family is doing something else on their behalf. And then that way the family can help. And then the family, you know, can work hard to stay focused on the person and not the illness.
Okay.
Because I change easier if I change towards a goal.
Okay.
If I want to achieve something, it's me, the person, that wants to achieve that. The illness wants to keep me stuck in the same routine, the same rituals over and over and over again. But if I want to do something, then I can grow towards that. So containing the illness is then part of the growth. But there might be other things that I need to learn or do to be able to achieve my goal. And in that process, the person grows. And it's, in my experience, it's a much more successful model to have a goal that I want to achieve.
Okay.
Because then the illness falls into place. The person becomes the prominent thing, the person's goals and ideas where they want to grow to.
Right.
That becomes the driving force.
Yeah.
And not just resisting the illness.
I like that. I like that. Changing the focus.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's also this, you know, I feel like there might be a danger, if I can call it that, where, you know, as we start to see that progress, you mentioned this as well just a few moments ago, that when we see some kind of improvement, sometimes we might add a little too much pressure in our excitement, in our enthusiasm, that we can see improvement, you're getting better, you can do it. I mean, you already did it last week, so surely you can do more this week. How do we pull ourselves back in our enthusiasm, in our excitement over the improvements that we're seeing?
Yeah, that's a common, very common problem. It's about differentiating between what I would like for my partner or my family member mm-hmm. versus what they would like to achieve.
Okay.
And it takes a bit more maturity. Mm. Because understanding, wow, I would like that person to be better and I would like that person to be healthy and be away from it, but that's my goal. The way they're doing it is their process. And just sometimes being honest with each other is, wow, it would be wonderful if you can sort of do more. And then, you know, either the person themselves or the person that suffers says, well, okay, I hear that, but one thing at a time. Let's stick to one thing at a time. And that's where the family can help. You know, the rest of the family, that they sort of support each other and sort of keeping calm and keeping patience.
Right.
And the family also having another life. Because what I often see is that if the family becomes too focused on the one that suffers, they want to make them the project. Mm. And they put their energy and their focus onto that person.
Yeah.
And that's not healthy. Each family member must have their own focus, their own goals. And they just support each other. So it's important, because when you have a chronic condition, the family can very easily see you as inferior.
Yes.
That you, you know, that you're suffering from not just from OCD, but also from stupidity.
Yes.
So, you know, we have to think for you and talk for you and do things for you. So that's a very fine line that people have to manage.
Mm.
And that's by being honest with each other and talking it through, and then putting limits down and saying, okay, but let's do this. You know, we've agreed this is the plan. And as I'm saying that, you know, we've agreed this is the plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the person that suffers. That's what they want to achieve, and that's the support that people around them can give or are willing to give.
Mm-hmm.
And then they walk with it.
Hmm. All right. And are there family-based therapy options available for OCD?
There are. You look at systemic therapy, and it's also in terms of psychoeducation for the family, understanding that cycle of OCD, and also understanding what does cognitive behavior therapy mean, and how does that specifically exposure response prevention process also works, because then they can support the person practically.
Mm.
And the treatment becomes more practical and real. It's not just this cloud that we're trying to achieve somewhere. Mm. There's actually a cycle that we're trying to address, and we're assisting each other. Where systemic family therapy comes in is that it can help people see the patterns and the complexity within their family system.
Okay.
And then how is that system either supporting the illness, worsening the illness, or how is the illness actually sort of giving signs and symptoms that the family is struggling?
Right.
You know, sometimes a person with OCD are the only one in the family that is sort of socially allowed to show emotions.
Mm.
So they might get worse because the family is struggling emotionally.
Yes.
And then as the family understand that cycle and what does the suffering person, what's their function in the family? If they've got the emotional function, it's often not just the person suffering, but something else in the system is happening.
Yeah.
And by knowing that, the system can grow and develop, and the family can see, okay, we need to talk about emotions, or mm-hmm. we need to learn to communicate differently with each other, and then develop from there.
Yeah. I like that, because I do think that there could be a tendency to put all our focus as a family and all our efforts on helping this one person and forget that the rest of us are individuals as well with our own goals, or who should have our own goals, our own lives, our own plans and things that we're trying to accomplish as well as individuals. Everything is now channeled toward this person, which we, in some way, we think we're helping when we do that, but it's actually making things worse, not just for that person, but for all of us.
Yeah, but you know, Bongi, the one thing is that it's so much easier for me to see someone else's problems and try and fix their problems than my own.
Very true.
So in a family, the bigger my problem is, the more likely I am to try and want to fix other people, because I feel better about myself and I can avoid my own problems. So that also plays a role in OCD. You know, so that the other family members, they've got their real issues, but they put the focus on the other person. So that person, again, the function that it, you know, they sort of the lightning relay. All the problems go to that person. The rest of the family is sort of absolved from responsibility of identifying or owning their own sort of mistakes and faults.
True.
More problems.
Sure. Thank you so much for coming through once again. Anything else that you'd like to share on the subject of the family's role?
I think family is a wonderfully protective environment. You know, if they understand it and they've got love and they've got grace, and they understand that helping sometimes means that my family member needs to work through this on their own, it can be very, very powerful in helping that person sort of grow beyond the illness.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming through. Thank you for your insights. And
I look
forward to another session sometime soon. God bless you.
Okay. Thank you, you too. Have a lovely day.
You too.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.